Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Russ M., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, February 20th, 2026, and today we're reading from the Big Book. We're in There's a Solution. We are on page 20, the fourth paragraph, starting with, "Now these are commonplace observations," ending with, "are very different from ours." All right, today's readers, the 12 steps, Gloria B., the 12 traditions, Tenzin P., starting us off at the text and sharing is Tamara C., page 164 is Tony B., our backup readers, Tina S., newcomer readers, Hanietta R., second hour host is Eileen M., and Kathy S. will be taking care of announcements. The reference numbers for yesterday, Thursday, February 19th, moving too quicker, 2026, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,224. And the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,225. The OA preamble, Overeaters Anonymous, is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for our members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And Gloria B. will now share the 12 steps.
Good morning, Gloria B., recovered compulsive overeater in Missouri. 12 steps from the 12 and 12. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thanks, Gloria. Next up is Tenzin P. with the 12 traditions.
Good morning, everyone. Tenzin P. checking in from New York, and here are our beautiful 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop compulsive eating. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much. Wishing everyone a blessed day.
Thanks, Tenzin. Thank you, Gloria. Appreciate it. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today we're back in There's a Solution on page 20, and we are sharing on that fourth paragraph, starting with now these are the commonplace observations, ending with are very different from ours. And Tamara C. is going to start us off, read, and share.
Good morning, Russ. Thank you for your service. This is Tamara C., recovered compulsive overeater in Missouri. The paragraph says, now these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we hear all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. We see that these expressions refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. So all of these expressions that we studied yesterday, observations on compulsive overeaters that are based on ignorance and misunderstanding, like she could stop eating if she wanted to. It's based on people whose reactions to food are very different than mine. I was amazed to read in the OA 12 and 12 when I came to OA and to learn that my reaction to food is different than other people. I had a friend who, when I first came to OA, I was so excited and enthusiastic, and I was telling all my friends about the program. And so one of my friends, she went and looked on the OA website, and she went through the 15 questions, to which I answered yes to almost every one. And she came back the next day and said, wow, I had no idea that people thought that way about food. And I said, what? I really thought every person on the planet thought that way about food. I truly thought that the only difference between myself and other people is that they were stronger. I thought they wanted and needed the food as much as I. And they thought about it all day long like me, but they were just able to say, I've had enough, I better stop, and they were able to stop. And it was a mystery to me that people seemed to eat just the right amount of food and their body size stayed stable without, they weren't even counting calories or weighing and measuring. And I thought, how could they possibly know when their bodies had enough fuel? And so to read that other people actually became satisfied and lost interest in the food. Wow, I that just blew me away, and that made so much sense to me. My own ignorance and misunderstanding toward myself was that I really thought, like, if only I were, like, a good person, I could eat right. If only I were smarter or a strong person or a worthy person, then I could control my food and my weight, just like others who I now know their reaction to food is very different than me. And I used to fantasize that I would find the perfect motivation and that would do the trick, or the perfect, just the right routine, and then I could control my food. And so that was a world of ignorance and misunderstanding that I had. I needed to know that the difference between the normal eater and myself is that I simply have an illness, an allergy of the body, and a mental twist. And I needed to know that my solution has nothing to do with being a smarter or better or stronger person. My solution is a spiritual awakening that comes by following the steps in this book. I'll pass.
Thanks, Tamara. Appreciate it. So now we're going to open up the lines for sharing. And although we value your experience, I ask that you limit your share to every third day to let others share. And if you share it on Wednesday or Thursday, please step back. So I'll need your name, first initial of the last name, and where you're calling in from. And if we can do it one at a time, I know how tough it is, but it helps out. All right, who's up?
Tony B.
Linda D.
Tony
Tanya
B.
Yes.
Tanya. And I got Tina. Tanya S.
B.
Tina
S.
Tina.
Kathy M.
B.
Melissa C.
Was that Kathy M?
Yes.
I got you, Melissa.
Okay, thanks. Thanks.
Yeah. Who else? Anyone else?
Barbara
All
in
right.
California.
Okay, Barbara. All right, so we got our list. Tony B, Tanya S, I think it was Tanya S, Tina S, PP, Kathy M, Melissa C, and Barbara A. Tony, you are up.
Thanks, Russ. My name's Tony B. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland, and very grateful, yes, to be on the line and here with you all and reading this this paragraph. You know, this is... I feel like There Is a Solution is, it was the first chapter that was written. And I think that the authors are talking to not only us as addicts, as compulsive overeaters, as alcoholics, but also to the world at large. They're talking to doctors and they're talking to psychiatrists. And it makes me think of... Harry Tybout, who took this book to Marty Mann, I think that was her name, and how, you know, he read this and then thought, my goodness, look, I've got something to offer others now. And you know, they're not commonplace. It's not the usual information in here. It's really unusual, not commonplace information or observation on drinkers. It's something special. It's a solution to our disease. And you know, back of these observations is certainly a world of ignorance and misunderstanding, which had been the case for centuries and centuries. And these kinds of things refer to people whose reactions are very different from our own. And we see some of those reactions a bit later on, you know, people who can take it or leave it alone, people who are able to stop or moderate. And for us as real compulsive overeaters, that is impossible. And that's the information that we're getting here, and that the world at large is getting here. perhaps the wife of the alcoholic, certainly the doctor, as I said, and psychiatrist and things. And it's really groundbreaking, and thank God for it. So with that, I will pass. Thanks, Russ.
All right, Tony, thank you. Next up is Tanya. How about now? We good now?
You're good now.
All right, Tanya. I believe it's Tanya S. followed by Tina S.
This is Tanya D. as in dog from Illinois.
Sorry, Tanya D.
It's all good. I'm a recovered compulsive reader in Illinois. Thank you for moderating the meeting, and grateful to be here. Yeah, this, I think a lot of my eating was in secret, right? So I carried the weight that was the result of it, but I ate, quote unquote, relatively normally around other people. So I didn't get a lot of these remarks directed at myself other than, from my parents who, I think, couldn't understand why I couldn't just eat less, and a lot of these remarks I made to myself, though, because I didn't really understand it either. Like the lead share, I thought everybody, well, I didn't explicitly think it, right, but I acted as though everybody else in the world had the same cravings, and they were just better able to control it. I also thought it was just a matter of losing weight. I don't know why I thought that, but it was like, if I just get it together and lose weight, then I can eat what I want. I never thought about that I would have to change something permanently. Like, I was just in such a diseased state that I couldn't really reason. And it was cunning, baffling, and powerful. And when I learned about the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, like coming into OA, it all made sense. Like it made sense why I couldn't lose weight. It made sense why I couldn't have just one and other people could. Now, I didn't like it. And in fact, the first time that I heard that in OA, some people gave up certain foods that triggered them, my first thought was like, oh no, like that's the best thing I've got in my life. Like that's how much my disease had taken hold. But I'm really grateful for the gift of desperation and this message that my reaction is very different from other people. And if I try to pretend that it's not and try to prove myself the exception despite the evidence in my eating history, then I'm going to eat myself into an early death. I do believe that, and or just, live a miserable life, which for me, like, the way that I was living in some ways felt worse than death. So I need to remember that I'm still different. And the great thing is that there is a fellowship out there. Like that was such a relief to learn that I was not alone, because I felt so defeated by this disease. And, I just love that I can sit around with other OAers and, joke about like, amateur night on Thanksgiving when, normal time. People might overeat and forget about it. Thanks. It's just like that, the fellowship of others who are like me is amazing. Thanks. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Tanya. Next up is Tina S., followed by PP.
Thanks for your service, Russ. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. Yeah, great, great shares this morning, and I can relate to everyone who shared. excuse me. I when we read the paragraph yesterday, I was like really looking back on my life, and I heard people say stuff like that, but usually I hung out with people that semi ate like I did, so they were kind of heavy too. And myself, but I too believe this stuff, you know, because I didn't understand, you know, I was ignorant of, you know, I didn't have any, I lacked the knowledge for sure, or the understanding of a compulsive eater. And, you know, and I thought all that stuff for myself, why can't I take it or leave it alone? You know, why don't I eat like a normal person? And I thought that other people didn't respond the way that I did. I thought there was really something wrong with me. You know, I saw people eat normally and they didn't struggle at all. So, but I didn't know what it was that was the matter with me, you know, and I love, you know, that it was also shared. You know, when I got here and I started really studying the book, you know, and really wanting to do what other people were doing so that I could get what they were getting. And what that was a spiritual awakening. You know, I had the same disease and they had a solution. You know, I had the allergy of the body, the obsession of mine, and that the solution was spiritual. Initially, I was like, not so much. But, you know, I had to look and see, you know, okay, did I want what I had all those years, or did I want something different in my life today? And so I started doing differently, you know, and I started working the steps, and I started to have a spiritual awakening so that I became different. Nobody else became different. I became different, and I could, you know, And for me, you know, I have alcoholic foods that I cannot put in my body because that will definitely set off the allergy. Now, whether I react to it or not, you know, because I'm pretty strong-willed. I know that today, you know, and I was a great dieter until I wasn't. But the good news for me is that I don't have to participate in any of that stuff. You know, I have a God today that when I ask him in the morning to keep me sober, abstinent, and sane, he does. You know, I pray for the willingness and the ability to follow a food plan and to do the next right thing. I pray to help those that need help today. All that stuff that I pray for, you know, and I don't even always want to do, but I pray for that anyway. And I always have the opportunity, and that keeps me free one day at a time. And I'm really grateful to be on the line, and I'm looking forward to what others have to share. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Russ.
Thanks, Tina. Next up is Peepley, followed by Kathy M.
Thanks, Russ, for taking the meeting and doing a great job. My name is Peepley. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy in the great state of Pennsylvania. You know, before I ever heard about Overeaters Anonymous, I don't even think I heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. I was asked by my sister to pick up favors for her wedding from this chocolate shop that she wanted these fancy favors. And I picked up 250 of these favors, and I had to drive them back to where she was. So she had them to give out after her wedding. There wasn't anything special going on. I didn't have anything in particular happening in my life that I could recall. I wasn't particularly hungry. But I decided to have a pee. I had decided to open one and have one. I figured there had to be some extra. You know, I had the one piece. And by the time I delivered the box of chocolates to my sister, I had eaten almost 35 of them. I didn't have the first piece because I was addicted to chocolate. I don't even like chocolate. It's not my thing. I didn't have the first piece because I had some kind of buildup of emotions or I didn't have enough friends. I had the first piece because it was a piece of chocolate. Everybody has chocolate. But what it did was it set off an abnormal reaction. See, I didn't get an abnormal effect from it. I got an abnormal reaction. It triggered craving. And that is the thing that distinguishes the compulsive overeater or the alcoholic from the non-alcoholic, that the substance triggers a reaction. Now, we can pontificate all we want about why we take the first bite or don't take the first bite or what keeps us from doing it. But the fact of the matter is that there's something biologically different in me that doesn't exist in the average eater, in the normal eater. And that's the thing that makes me a distinct entity. right? I have to remember that the only way that that reaction can happen is by ingesting the substance or engaging in the behavior that triggers it. It doesn't get triggered by who's in office or not in office. It doesn't get triggered by who's in the Epstein files or not in the Epstein files, or whether I'm lonely or not lonely, or whether I have a sponsor or don't have a sponsor. It gets triggered by the substance or the behavior that causes it. And unless I could embrace the basic blocking and tackling of this disease, I will continue to suffer from it to the day I die. Now, that's not my opinion. That's what the literature says about the condition. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate it. Before Kathy M. jumps up on here, let me let you know where we're at if you got on the meeting a bit later. So in There's a Solution, page 20, the fourth paragraph, starting with, now there's a commonplace, now these are commonplace observations, ending with, are very different from ours. All right, Kathy, you're up.
Good morning, everybody. Russ, thanks for taking the meeting today. This is Kathy M. from Michigan, recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks to this amazing fellowship and this amazing big book. I was the biggest skeptic of all. I was science-based. I'm a science teacher. I was very skeptical about the concept of a twist of the mind and an obsession of the mind. I was very skeptical. I came into an OA meeting, and I'll never forget the time that I heard somebody say, well, we have an allergy. And I was like, in my head, I was like, well, it's not really an allergy. I was so skeptical of allowing myself the grace of having that there was something wrong with me, that I was different. I didn't want to be different. I didn't want to accept that I had this abnormal reaction, which was referred to as an allergy, which I fought for a while until I looked it up in the dictionary, and it actually does mean an abnormal reaction to something. But, you know, I was totally science, you know, no, that's not what an allergy is, and blah, blah, blah. And it took me a while until I finally truly started to grasp that this is an addiction, and an addiction does have a scientific basis. And it doesn't matter if I understand the scientific basis or not. I have it. So I need to let, and I have now accepted that I am different, and other people don't react the way I react when I eat certain things. And they just don't understand that craving that ensues after I have ingested a substance takes over my mind and my body. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is that I was a huge skeptic, and if there are any newcomers on here and you're skeptical and we're all talking about these phrases and ideas you haven't maybe heard of before with regard to food, it works, and it takes a little bit of acceptance, a little bit of open-mindedness to let all of this sink in and to get to the point where you can allow yourself to become part of this fellowship and to receive the solution. There is a solution, but we have to be open to receiving the solution. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Kath. Next up is Melissa C., followed by Barbara A.
Hey, good morning, Russ. Thanks so much for your service this morning. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in New York. And, you know, gosh, I was listening, you know, to Pete's story about driving those chocolates in the car. And I've done that repeatedly. That's like the story of my life, you know, putting me in charge of, like, the candy for someone's wedding. It's like, you know, it's like putting the wolf in charge of a picnic basket. I'm just ill-equipped, you know, I was ill-equipped to do that. And, you know, I grew up in a family where, you know, there was a lot of ignorance and misunderstanding. They loved me, you know, but they didn't understand what it was that I was up against. And so, you know, I was put in positions all the time and expected to moderate or just leave it alone. And I could do neither. You know, think about being a little girl and knowing that there was a cake in the refrigerator and I could not help but to, you know, go in the dark back to that refrigerator over and over until it was gone, and waking up in the morning to like hearing my family searching out where the hell, where'd the cake go? And they didn't understand, you know, so, and here's the thing, right? They still don't. And that's okay. You know, like I have a brother who's, I used to steal his candy from all the time. He had to, you know, hide his stash from me. And this is the same brother who will explain to me that, yeah, I, you know, he'll tell me like, yeah, I really have to watch how much, you know, how much treats I eat. And he'll point to his, you know, middle-aged belly, and he'll say that, he, you know, so he only brings it in the house on the weekends. And, you know, and he'll also lovingly, you know, get into a debate with me about that I've got such discipline now that surely if I wanted to, I could have whatever it is that's on their table when they invite me over. And, you know, here's the thing. It's not my responsibility to necessarily educate them. You know, it's my responsibility to know what it is I have and to respect it. And what I found is that if I live that way, then the people around me begin, well, at least they leave me alone. You know, at least they don't, nobody harps on me anymore to eat things that I know are dangerous for me to eat. And, you know, I'm grateful today to know that I can't take the first bite. But I'm even more grateful today to have a recovery that removed the desire. Like, I could drive anybody's candy around today. My husband hides his stash, you know, in my meditation room, and I would never touch it. I don't even know it's here. And, yeah, with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Melissa. Next up is Barbara A., and then we'll take another list.
Good morning, Russ. This is Barbara A. from California. In the process of recovery, every morning when I wake up. This reading, although very short, I had a lot to think about. I related to something in everybody's shares today. I thank you for that. It said this first thing, now, these are commonplace observations on drinkers or eaters, which we hear all the time. I told myself these things all the time. I told myself, why can't you stop? If only you would stop, you'd be so pretty. If only you would do this. You know, can't you just eat a little bit and stop? I mean, this is the conversation in my head daily. I don't know how it related to my honesty, but there's a maturity that came through using these steps with stumbles along the way, definitely, that my higher power through these steps has been this guiding force, an intuition which has given me the perspective that I can recognize that I look at food differently than others. I act differently around food. You know, I pray for that willingness and that humility to just, the willingness to allow myself to accept that my reactions are very different from others. And then the humility to just, I guess, go back. It's not, things are so, people, what others said or thought was so important to me. It was so important. And I want the humility to realize that I was, you know, I didn't have the wherewithal to be strong enough to listen to something other than my voice in my head. I'm so grateful for these meetings. I mean, I was up, I think, at 2:30 this morning. I laid down again, and I was just like waiting for 4 o'clock so I could come on the meeting and just share and be a part of this fellowship because I need it. I'm a compulsive overeater. And grateful for this program. Thank you. I pass.
All right. Thank you, Barbara. So we're going to take another lineup for Sharon. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day. So if you shared in the past couple of days, just step back. I need your first name, first initial, and last name, where you're calling in from. We could take about, I think we could get 6. I didn't time it out, but I'm just going on feel here. So who wants to share? I got somebody from North Carolina.
That was Linda D.
All right, Linda. Good day.
Anna S.
Anna.
Wisconsin.
S. Got it.
Kelsey R. in Texas.
Kelsey. Who else?
Roz G.
All right, Roz. Who else?
Julie M. New York.
Julie.
Mary A. from Maine, if we have time.
All right. We're going to roll with that. We got a good list. We got Linda, Anna, Kelsey, Roz, Julie, and Mary. Linda, you're up.
Thanks, Russ. This is Linda D. from North Carolina. Been out for recovering food addicts, and I have been out for a while, and I'm back. And one of the things that brought me back among others is that when I find myself trying to explain to people that I have an addiction and that my bodily reaction is different than other people's to food, folks don't get that. But the bottom line is they don't have to get it. If they don't have the problem, they don't have to get it. There's a community that gets it, and I can always come back here. So it also helps me realize that if I'm trying to convince someone else that I have this addiction or that there's such a thing as an abnormal bodily reaction or, as I related to that other share, an allergy, which I also had trouble with that word in the beginning. I think a lot of people do. That is a disturbance because they're not thinking the way I want them to think. I've learned already, having been through these steps and been recovered in the past, that when I think other people need to think the way I think, I'm playing God. I'm acting like the director. So this leads me to the idea that, you know, it's not just about the weight anymore, although that does fluctuate. It's about my head. It's about the addictive thinking, the alcoholic brain. And it's about the character or defects or shortcomings or whatever you want to call them that also reemerge when I'm not working my program. And it makes me miserable. It probably makes people around me miserable, too, because they probably want me to just shut up. Or maybe they'll look at me and say, oh, what are you talking about? But it really doesn't matter. I saw something that said what other people think of me is none of my business. So, yes, it's abnormal. Well, maybe it's normal for us. I don't like that word, normal or abnormal. It's probably normal for us, and I'm glad to be back, and looking forward to hearing more from y'all. And with that, I'll pass.
All right, Linda, next up is Anna S., followed by Kelsey R.
Hey, this is Anna S. from Kenosha, Wisconsin, and I am so grateful to be here with y'all. And this reading, you know, it took me a long time to believe I had this thing, even though, you know, I literally was dying of diabetes. I had a blood sugar of 700 and an A1C at 12.6 and was in the hospital with the doctors telling me that that I was dying, that my organs were shutting down in ketoacidosis. And when my sugar went below 300, I was blind for 2 weeks. And I've lost organs from diabetic neuropathy. And I'm telling you that because I still didn't believe I had this. And I was still eating binge foods a year into the program. And it took a long time for me to get here to where I believed that I had this thing. And, you know, yesterday was a big day for me. I did my fifth step and I told someone and God everything. And, you know, they didn't fire me. And it was also a big day because I went to the doctor and the doctor said that, you know, you're always diabetic when you're diagnosed diabetic. But she said that on paper and with all of my tests, I am no longer diabetic. That's a miracle. Like, my A1C is 5.3. My sugar runs around 100. I am no longer going to be taking diabetic medications of any kind. Like, that's a miracle. And that is from this program. And that's what we do. And my high weight was 274. I'm now 174. That's 100 pounds. I still got about 50 pounds to go. You know, but oh my God, it's like I've been given a whole new life. And I told someone yesterday all the things that I've done and the good, the bad, the ugly, the real ugly, you know, and he said, you know, we're all deeply ill people. But he didn't fire me and he didn't hate me. And I just, you know, and I feel like all these things are leaving me. You know, he said it might take a couple days for everything to fully leave and just keep saying the seventh step prayer. But the point is, in this reading, is I didn't believe I had this thing. I really didn't. It took me a long time of really explicitly facing death to believe that I had this thing. And now that I see that I have it, it's so blatantly obvious. And now it's kind of getting over the fact that I'm not alone, that I get to be here with all of you, that, you know, that I didn't ever feel like I fit in anywhere, but if I reach out, there are other people here that I get to do this with, and I'm so grateful for that. So that's what I wanted to share this morning. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kels. Anna, sorry.
Anna, next up from Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Yep, Anna, yep. Got broken eyes today and ears. Next up is Kelsey R., followed by Roz G.
Hey guys, I'm Kelsey R. in Texas, a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks, Russ, for your service. It's a good paragraph. I had to relate it to my own experience, and these were the thoughts that I told myself over and over again in the rooms of OA. I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't I now? Right in a state of abstinence. I can now drink like a lady. I can handle my liquor. Why don't I try some controlled, intuitive eating of my yellow light foods and just lay off the hard stuff? I'm no longer binging and purging. I must have some power again. I did stop, and I can again because I always have started again when I delusionally thinking that I really wanted to. Marriage, children, the life I dreamed of, could never keep me stopped. So what do I have to do? What do I have to ask myself? All I have to do is ask myself two questions. On page 44, I don't even have to figure out what the questions are. It gives them to me. If, when I honestly want to, I find I cannot quit entirely, or if, when drinking, I have little control over the amount I take, then I am probably an alcoholic with food. If that be the case, then I am suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. I have to put the food down. I have to believe that the doctor's opinion is my opinion of me. It doesn't matter. It didn't matter for me for 2 decades. I knew the information, but I didn't accept it as my truth in my very, very core. Or I would accept it, and then I would start to feel better. And then I would step back from all of the things that I did that made me feel better, because I felt better. So I didn't have the pain driving me to take the action. But my treatment plan doesn't change just because I'm in a recovered state. I have to keep nurturing that spiritual awakening. I either have spiritual momentum, or I have addictive momentum. And I'm going one way or the other. I like to believe that I'm not moving. Like, I'm good. I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to just keep doing what I'm doing. But the way my mind works is I'm either going towards the food, or I'm going towards the spiritual solution. And my God is relentless in his pursuit to rescue me. For 20 years, I have tried to start and stop and start and stop and start and stop. And all I have to do is surrender. Thanks. With that, I pass.
All right, Kelsey, thank you. Next up is Roz G, followed by Julie M.
Hey, good morning, Russ, and good morning, everyone. I'm Roz G. I'm a compulsive overeater recovered in Palmdale, California, which is in Los Angeles County in the state of California, if I didn't say that. I probably did. Anyway, yeah, I was listening to all these wonderful shares this morning, and it reminded me of my reactions in the past. I want to be a normie, and I'm not. I'm a compulsive overeater. And, you know, working with sponsees really reminds me of the things I do, or listening to these shares, or, you know, reading this, and the word reaction kind of stood out to me. And I remember years ago, going to my grandma's house for Christmas, and they made a big pot of gumbo. And it was a seafood gumbo, and there's a lot of shrimp in it. And while shrimp isn't one of my binge foods, I took that ladle and I put so much shrimp in my bowl. And I remember my sister saying to me, "Dang, Roz, you're going to take all the shrimp?" And my reaction was anger. What's anger? Split second, and I flopped my bowl right back in the pot and gave my sister the dirtiest look. And I was talking to a sponsee yesterday, and I was reminded of when I worked at a theater. I worked in the food court thing for intermission. And we sold cookies and brownies and wine. And whatever was left over, I took and ate some so that I didn't have to share it with my kids. And sometimes I would sit in the parking lot after the show in the dark and eat that stuff. What kind of reaction is that? Oh, my gosh. I can laugh at myself now. I love to laugh. And I could just say to myself, Roz, You really are a compulsive overeater. Your reaction to food was like, oh, I need to get it before somebody else takes it from me. Because, you know, I lived in poverty for a while, and I was afraid I was never going to have more. I have the disease of more. I want more. I'm afraid I'm not going to have more. And that's just the way I react without this step work, without prayer, meditation, God, sponsoring, getting sponsored, having a food plan, writing it down, all these spiritual disciplines I have to practice every day so that I can live a normal life. Without these practices, I'm doomed. So I would like to say thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
All right, there, Wallace. Thanks a lot. Next up is Julie M.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Julie M., and I live in New York. Thank you, Ross, for your service and everyone shares on the line today. I came to OA in 2006, and I was really happy when I came into the rooms and I figured that I had an eating disorder. And I was on the pink cloud, and I lost some weight. And then in 2007, the death of my only child took me out again. And it was a horrific experience, and I just had one thing, and it went on to other things and other things. For a long time, I was in a relapse for about 8 years. And, you know, I tried many different things, and nothing worked. I never left OA, though. I just kept coming back to the rooms, and I just kept trying over and over, and my anger got ahead of myself. And, you know, it was just a time in my life that it was dark and bleak. And then I came to the Gift of Desperation in March 7th, 3 years ago, and I was on my knees and I was begging God again, God, please, I cannot do this anymore, you know, and I was desperate. So I got on my knees, I took the pause, and I listened, and it said to go to the first telephone meeting. You know, I opened up my computer, I went to the first telephone meeting, and it was a vision for you. And a vision for you, you know, helped me to surrender my will in my life. And although I had a great relationship with my higher power, so I thought, because step 11 for me is my favorite all-time step that I practice every morning. I don't leave home without it, and throughout the day. And I just couldn't understand, you know, I found a sponsor in Vision. She guided me for the first 90 days. I got a nutritionist. You know, I did everything that she said, and through God's grace, I became abstinent. And a year ago, I had to, you know, start over again. So recently, I was visiting my relatives, and one of them continued to push the food, you know, because it comes back to, you know, they didn't understand what was going on. And I would say, you know, the last time I went there, I said, I can't have any sugar in anything. Please be mindful of that, you know. And so this time she just kept pushing it. And I said, listen, I just want to talk to you. I have an eating disorder. And I really would really appreciate if you didn't, you know, push the food on me. And, you know, she was taken aback, but she gracefully backed off. Oh, and with that, I pass. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thanks, Julie. Appreciate it. And our last share is going to be Mary A.
Hey, good morning, Russ. Good morning, everyone. My name's Mary A. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Portland, Maine. And thank you, Russ, for your service and to everyone for the shares today. It's been really inspirational. And as I look at the, you know, now these are commonplace observations. So the observations are in the paragraph before. And as I was rereading those, I realized that actually wasn't my experience. People weren't saying, why don't you stop eating? Why don't you lose weight? In fact, my compulsion around food didn't kick in until after I had come into 12-step food recovery and lost 100 pounds. And, but it was after that that I started sneaking and hiding and where the disease really kicked in. So for me, what the experience was it's a baby shower. Everybody eats cake at the baby shower. Why aren't you eating cake? Or why can't you just have a bite of this? Or, well, just have a handful of those and call that your protein when you're hungry in the middle of the afternoon. Even talking with a nutritionist where I said, you know, I have a real problem with a particular food. It seems to, this was before I really understood the craving. It seems to set off this reaction in me. And she was like, yeah, but if you're on a plane and you need quick protein, you can have that. It's like, well, no, my body chemistry doesn't change just because I'm on a plane. And I know that now.
So even though the examples of how like society and the world were trying to interact with me and food are different than what's in the preceding paragraph, the conclusion is the same, which is back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. Those expressions, why can't you just have a small slice of cake at the shower? That's a whole world of misunderstanding. And it's not my place to explain in detail to anybody unless they ask. And yesterday, my boss, who knows that I'm also an alcoholic in recovery, approached me and said, I notice that you're so disciplined about your eating. Can you tell me why? And I'm grateful that I work in an environment where I can be really authentic. And I said, actually, Karen, the way that I eat is an extension of my alcoholism. It turns out that I have alcoholic eating. We call it compulsive overeating. And the way that you see me eating is actually like a medical prescription for my body to keep me sane and sober when it comes to food. In that moment, I was actually thinking of all of you and thinking of all of us and thinking of Bill and Bob and how grateful I am to know the severity of my condition, to know the source of my condition, and to know the solution to my condition, which is a God of my understanding that these steps deliver me to, and the willingness then to love myself the way that God loves me so that I no longer abuse myself with food. And it's so easy. We heard someone earlier say, you know, I can drive anybody's candy around. Thank you, Russ. I can drive anybody's candy around. Thank you, God, for that neutrality. I hope that I never, ever take that for granted. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks so much.
All right, Mary, thank you very much. You're our last shift today. Thank you to everybody who shared, did service today. What a great meeting. So please join us for a second on Refrigerated Hour Study, immediately following the closings. Today's share ID, Friday, February 20th, 2026, at 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,227. That's 23227. And now we'll close with reading from the big book on page 164, followed by a Serenity Prayer. Tony B is going to read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then. And then we'll pray the Serenity Prayer.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.